episode 286 of the PNC Progression Wrestling Podcast. I'm Elio. He's Ben. It is a special matinee edition. Ben, what's going on?
Not too much, man. I'm just recovering from all of this pay-per-view excitement, both from the AEW Fallout and the Survivor Series stuff that we got going on this weekend. Now, just as I warned you before we went on the air, I have a lot to say in particular about the Full Gear show. And, you know, before you guys say, oh, he's going to go on a rant, it's not necessarily a rant, because there was a lot that I enjoyed about this Full Gear show. No, it wasn't bad at all.
No, I said, who said that? I didn't say anything about rants.
I have a history of going on rants, so I just don't want the listeners to tune me out because I go on rants. But no, there was a lot of positive stuff, but you know, it's the same thing with WWE. When I see stuff that doesn't make sense over there, I have to bring it to your attention. And so it's going to be the same thing over here. And there was one, I think the people know where I'm going with this, but there was one, you know, theme throughout the evening that just didn't make any sense. So, you know, just be prepared for that. And with that in mind, we're going to start going over the Full Gear show. Now, just as a reminder, this is not the typical highs and lows presentation, because this is a pay-per-view post-show of sorts, in addition to previewing Survivor Series. So just to get you guys set up before we jump in. So the first high point, and I actually, you know what? Before we get into high points and low points, let's go over the pre-show first, because, and I know we typically don't do that, I know, but there were three matchups on the pre-show, and one of which fed directly into the main event of the pay-per-view. So let's start with that.
All right.
First off, and Elio, you know I was so pissed off when you read this matchup to me, was the Ring of Honor World Championship match with Eddie Kingston taking on Jay Lethal. And of course, we had the bullshit with Sanjay Dutt setting him singing the Jarrett's at ringside. I'm not sure why.
Why is Jeff Jarrett still around? Like, you would think that, like, he'd be, like, done, like, out of it, like, retired, enjoying his life.
Well, it's just, you know, and I've never really had a problem with Jeff Jarrett. But it's just, I think it's one of those things where certain people have trouble letting go when a certain thing is like your entire life.
As long as you don't turn into Ric Flair.
Well, but it's getting to that point. I mean, I know Jeff isn't as old as Ric.
Yeah.
But that would be my concern. Getting back to the match.
Speaking of AEW Full Gear, I'm just looking up something that I was looking at earlier having to do with Full Gear. I wanted to bring that up. Go on.
No, go ahead.
No, I have to find it. I was just saying I saw something that having to do with one of the matches.
Okay, very good. So was it a bad match? No, it was not. It was a perfectly decent match, but it was one of those that didn't have to be on the pay-per-view or even on the pre-show. Now, that is nothing against Jay Lethal or Eddie Kingston. It's just I have issues buying into the Ring of Honor product because on one hand, I don't think it belongs on the AEW programming because it's not AEW. It's a completely separate entity, and I think it confuses people. And number two, with the way that the titles have been presented on, you know, AEW television from a Ring of Honor perspective, I think Ring of Honor is coming off third rate. Which if you're gonna have a company, then you know you gotta get it on TV. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I know that that's, you know, easier said than done. I understand that completely. I'm, you know, from a business perspective.
But they had plenty of time to, like, try and get something for Ring of Honor.
But, yeah, but so it's like I'm not outright being an asshole. Like, what are they doing dragging on their feet? I'm not saying that. I'm sure it's much more difficult than what I think it is. But it's just this current presentation of Ring of Honor is doing more damage to the brand more so even than if it was dead, because even if the Ring of Honor that we knew was dead, we could still appreciate the history of it. And it wouldn't be tainted by what they're doing now. You know? But in terms of the wrestling, I had no complaints. You know, Jay Lethal has always been one of my absolute favorites. I actually met him several years ago, and he was one of the nicest people I've ever met.
I believe we have an interview. There was an old interview that he did before I joined Wrestling POE Global with the old host of that podcast.
Yes, well, if he was as nice on there as he was with me, then
it was the same thing. He was like really cool.
Yeah, well, no wonder this guy has reached the top, because on top of being a superb in-ring talent, the guy was just an absolute class act.
And making me laugh with that woo-offy with Ric Flair.
to this day, folks, that woo-off is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in pro wrestling.
Oh my god, I didn't know what was going on. I'm sitting there like, what the hell?
I mean, I was dying.
And think that was Nigel McGuinness in the ring there. Only had a ridiculous name, a different name.
Yeah, Desmond Wolf.
Yeah, like, come on, really?
Yeah, it was, no. His name is Nigel McGuinness, goddammit.
Thank you.
You know, what do I always say about ring names and changing the shit up? And I don't like it. No,
yep.
Stop. Don't do that. Did this have, like I said, didn't have to be on the pay-per-view, but perfectly decent, perfectly good. It just never reached that next level. Even if it's a pre-show, you know, if it's on a pay-per-view, things should be on the next level from not only, you know, the in-ring perspective, because anything can happen on any given night in the ring, but also from a story, perspective, it just wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
It's confusing to me. I don't know if you felt the same way.
World championship matches on a kickoff show should not should not be a thing.
Be a thing.
If you have a World Heavyweight Championship match, it should be the main show.
Absolutely. And so next up, we had Claudio versus Buddy Matthews. Now, I could watch these guys wrestle anytime, anywhere, and I'm going to be happy as a fucking clam. Because to me, these two are some of the best at what they do, period.
This one was a good match.
So, and plus, you know, to match my earlier point, this one did have story going into it because of the issues between the BCC and the House of Black.
Yes, at the end, Claudio went to shake Buddy Matthews' hand, but I just, like, slapped him away and exited the ring.
which I love that because it opens the door for more matches like this, and I'm perfectly good with that. Now why this stuff is not on the main card, I don't know.
This should be a theme as well, between the BCC and the House of Black
throughout the show. On the main card.
Yep.
Also, so my question is, wouldn't it make sense from a continuity and flow perspective to have this match on there too?
Right. But then were they chanting for Rhea Ripley during this match?
Yes.
We want mommy. Like, what?
Which I don't blame them for. Everybody should, you know, Rhea Ripley is on a different level right now.
Yeah.
You know, she is having the career and the impact in wrestling that most people can only dream of. So good for her, and, you know, well deserved in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have thoroughly enjoyed her work from the word go. So I have no problem with that. Now, you know, and Buddy, to his credit, is also absolutely phenomenal at what he does. Do I think he should be dealing with Rhea Ripley barbs from people like the Acclaimed and stuff like that? No, not really, because I think it distracts from, you know, what he's involved in and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I get why that's happening. And I don't think that that's a case of Finn just being stupid. Like, I can understand why that's happening. Now, if I were to give a high point for a pre-show, which I don't do, but this would be it. I love what these guys bring to the table. Please, more of this. Okay, now we get to the proverbial meat and potatoes of the pre-show.
This next match I didn't really care for. I mean, well, I at first, okay, like, because it's Samoa Joe, but the way they carried it out to, like, at the end, like, more near the end, it was, like, really weird.
Well, and that's the conversation that I want to have with you. So before we get into that, let's talk about the actual match. So this match was more about the story, mm-hmm. Because, you know, Samoa Joe was the only one that wanted to tag with MJF because
Samoa Joe was going to turn on MJF at any time during the match.
I did too, but at the same time, if they won it, he would get a world title shot. So I was expecting the turn at the end of the match, like, after the bell. Right. So I was surprised that nothing happened there. But we did get plenty that happened after after the bell, which I didn't care for it because it doesn't make sense with how it was carried out by the end of the evening.
Right.
So as a wrestling match, did I have a problem with this? No, but to be honest with you, I'm not a fan of the guns. I don't see it with them. At least not yet. You know, they're still young. I'm not seeing it with them. And I think having them involved in this and plus all the stuff with, Jay White, and it made sense concerning the main event. Like, I get that. Mm-hmm. And why they would want to beat up MJF, but like just the guns themselves, I'm not really a fan of. So it's like, meh. But from a story perspective, that part with the guns and then beating up MJF after the fact in favor of their boss, Jay White, that part made sense. Here's the part I didn't like. Okay. So at the end of the match, we get the attack, which leads to the knee injury, which leads to the ambulance angle. And as
don't let them take my belt.
Yes, don't let them take the championship away from me, Adam. At least you didn't say Adam like Roderick Strong. So I did appreciate that, but so you knew that some bullshittery was going to happen at the end of the situation. Here's where they lost me, though. Okay, and I don't want to jump too far ahead, but so right off the bat, you're thinking, well, if Adam Cole is even entertaining the possibility of going in there for MJF in the main event, then why the fuck wouldn't he participate and be the tag team partner for MJF defending their titles against the guns? If he was even if he's good enough to entertain the concept of wrestling, which let's not lose sight of the fact that that's fucking ridiculous because he had crutches and a fucking cast on his leg.
Wait a minute, yeah. Now I'm confused, because if he was so injured, why couldn't he, and he said he'd go after the championship himself and not let it get away from MJF. Why couldn't he participate in the tag team match?
Well, and I think that's what confused a lot of people, because when I was looking around, social media, that was the alarm bell that was going off in a lot of people's heads. And that actually made me feel good, because, the concept that I always talk about on this podcast is logic. So when now granted, this logic gap was fucking ginormous. So a lot of people would obviously catch on to that, but a lot of people would tend to skate past, logic gaps because it's pro wrestling. But I was happy to see that a lot of people were like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense at all, because it doesn't. And, so I like the fact that they had a narrative throughout the evening and they tried to do something, but I'm just not sure what the point was. And maybe we'll get more going on as we get into World's End, but let's not lose sight of the fact that we're also going to talk about this, in the main event, obviously, because it was a huge impact on the main event, the whole story. It's things like this that are like, holy shit, come on, bruh. You couldn't see this coming, yep. Really? You couldn't see the shit storm from the fans, justifiably so. Then they're like, what the fuck is this?
Yep.
And it takes away from what was a perfectly decent wrestling match. So, you know, it's like, what the heck, you know. So I don't want to be, like, too critical on it because, you know, I think it was a decent match and, you know, at least they tried to do something, but the execution was terrible. Yeah. And that cannot be understated enough. So then we get into the main card. Okay. And first up, we have the triple threat match between Team Copeland and Team Daddy, Christian Cage.
Okay, Ben, come on. Is that not the stupid name for a faction, the Patriarchy?
Yeah, well, that's why I called it Team Daddy.
I know, but I'm saying it, the Patriarchy. I mean, I didn't even know they had a name.
I didn't realize that until I think you know, like maybe the Dynamite beforehand.
Okay.
Because I didn't catch Rampage. Well, I never watched Rampage, but I didn't even catch Collision this week because I've been so busy with this show. Mm-hmm. And of course, POV. Now, this was a fun match. It's not going to exceed 3 stars, in my opinion. I can't give it more than 3 because it was just such a, such a train wreck.
What'd you think of the entrance? The children singing the heels out to the ring.
That was funny as fuck. Because he's got the whole daddy gimmick and he's got, you know, kids singing the song. So I thought that was hilarious.
He's like Heath Slater, he's got kids.
Christian is so underrated in this industry. Yeah. Just throughout his entire career, he's underrated as fuck. And if anybody has benefited from going from WWE to AEW, it's Christian Cage.
Yep.
This work of his is just brilliant. Now, and I think Luchasaurus is another guy who's criminally underrated, who I think this heel turn is bringing stuff out for him.
I really hated Christian as a face in AEW. It just wasn't working.
Well, to your point, you know, when has Christian as a babyface ever worked? And like, has he ever had a face run that worked for you? I'm not talking just AEW. I'm talking overall.
Well, when it was Edge and Christian as a team, then they were faces.
Yeah, but I mean. But as a singles competitor, I don't think he ever had a singles run.
Was he a face when he was the world champion, when he faced Alberto Del Rio, or was he a heel?
I think he was a face because they were doing that whole storyline for Edge.
Oh, okay, yeah. See, so he did have one face run.
Yeah. But that was for Edge and to still have him involved in something, yeah. right in the aftermath of his retirement.
Yeah.
As a side note, I know we always talk about this. Darby Allin is going to get himself killed one day. I swear to God.
You know what I was reading? I was reading actually. Something where Edge even told Darby Allin to slow it down with all the crazy wild stuff in the ring.
Well, apparently he didn't listen because did you see the fucking?
I saw that he went flying through the ropes to the outside, and then he hit that barricade.
Well, not only that spot, but did you see the spot where Luchasaurus chokeslammed him? You know, from inside the ring to outside the ring.
Okay, right. That's the one I was thinking of. Yeah, where he landed face first near the barricade.
Oh my god.
Oh man.
And it's like, bro. And then I couldn't help but laugh. I shouldn't have laughed, but I just couldn't help it. Okay. Maybe this is the indication that I should be a heel if I ever get involved in pro wrestling management. Okay, but I laughed my ass off. So Tony Schiavone and Excalibur, right in the aftermath of this face plant, are talking about how Darby Allin is going to be taking time off of this after this match because he has to get prepared to...
Yes, he catches the red eye to climb Mount Everest.
which is bullshit because he's not climbing it till the beginning of 2024. So they made it sound like... They made it sound like he was going to climb it like the day after the match or some shit.
When I heard that, I'm like, oh, that means he's going to be on the red eye. I'm like, wait, what?
So that was another thing that made no sense whatsoever. And then, you know, the other thing, and this might be me nitpicking and being an asshole, but I can't help it. I'm sorry. Do you think Nick Wayne should be involved in this?
No, I'm so confused about what Nick Wayne's role is in all of this.
Like, I get it.
I just don't get it. This guy who just comes in from, like, I guess the independents, and right away he's thrown into, like, a program like this.
And he's got Sting, and he's got Ric Flair.
Yeah, what?
Either this guy won the lottery, or he's the most spoon-fed son of a bitch ever. And that's nothing against Nick Wayne, but if you just look at the fucking, look at his fucking presentation on TV, and, I've called Alex Abrahantes when he comes out with the Lucha Bros. I always call him the accountant.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Wayne looks like a Make-A-Wish kid.
Yay, Ray, I'm a Make-A-Wish.
And oh my god, it's just like, let's not forget, people, the legendarily bad back and forth segment between Nick Wayne and his mommy.
My god, that was so terrible.
It was fucking awful.
Where Jim Ross was like, she like talked to like, like he was like, don't do that, that's your mother. Oh my god.
It was terrible. So it's like, yeah, was I excited to see Adam Copeland back in the ring doing what he wanted to do? Yeah. Was this a good match? Was it kind of cool to see Sting, on his road to retirement? Yeah. But I wasn't interested in seeing Darby Allin almost fucking die.
But of course, we had to see Ric Flair take his bump.
And do the chops. And listen, I feel like it's becoming a running gag every time we mention Ric Flair on this show. And I really don't want to come off like I don't appreciate Ric Flair. Because that's not true. But it's just like... Bro, you're bastardizing your legacy right now.
I'm saying, Cameron was, focused on him at that one spot when it should be in the ring. Why are you focusing on Ric Flair?
Exactly. And, Tony Khan is a fucking fanboy. We both know that. But it's just, oh, God.
So did you watch the media scrum? I didn't get to watch it.
Yeah. No. To be honest with you, brother, I was so tired at the end of the night. I was like, I can't.
I don't know. I might watch it tonight, maybe, whatever. Instead of NXT or before NXT.
Well, I'll tell you what, bro. Thank God Clay covers NXT for us over on POV because... If I had to cover that on a weekly basis outside of my high points and low points, I couldn't do this. Like, NXT just doesn't make any goddamn sense. But we're jumping ahead. But before we go into the next match, I think we should take a break because we're running low on time and we're getting the exit signal, the rapid signal from our virtual producer. Shut up, bitch. It's our show, goddammit. But we will step aside and take a real quick break, and then we'll get back into the rest of AEW Full Gear without any interruptions. We'll be right back.
All right, we're back, and we're going to get into match number two, the International Championship, Orange Cassidy and John Moxley. Ben, why is this guy champion again? The return of the knapsack.
I don't... You know what? I'll say this. He has proven to me that he is a very good wrestler, right?
Yeah, no, he is, yeah. But his gimmick is just, like, so...
It's god-awful.
I don't like it. Like, I don't get it. So, can we, like... And he doesn't... He's not done anything to change it up or, like, to modify it or make it any different.
Not at all. And, you know, I'm somebody who really enjoys Jon Moxley. Mm-hmm. Okay? I think he brings an element of realism and of badassery to his presentation and to the ring. So I get that. And I enjoy that. This match for me was a low point if we were doing the typical high point, low point format here. And the reason for that.
I'm following along with you on a Bleacher. I'm looking at the grades that they give these matches. My God, what are you doing?
And, well, after I'm done giving my review of this match, I want to definitely hear that. And the reason why I give this one a low point is because. It felt like every other match I've seen between the two of them. There was nothing.
Yep.
There was nothing different. You know, Orange Cassidy actually had Mox delivering lazy kicks to him to mock him. I don't need to see Mox doing lazy kicks.
Oh, I saw that when he was like mocking Orange Cassidy's stupid kicks. Yeah.
And also, the other thing to me, the beach break looks like such a weak finisher to me that it's like, after all of that, after all the chops and punches and bleeding and all that, you're going to tell me that Mox is finished off by a beach break? Are you fucking kidding me?
That sounds so wrong, the way that came out.
Why does it sound wrong?
No, is it Mark? Because you don't really hear anyone being finished by a beach break.
Yeah.
It's like, it sounds weird. A beach break is like something you, it's like a break you would take and you go on vacation.
Yeah, definitely. And then, I just, so, already, you have me behind the eight ball in an Orange Cassidy match because I just don't care about the gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then, you know, when you're doing the same thing you've been doing and having the same style of match, you know, that's not going to be a high point for me. What did you think of this match?
Orange Cassidy's matches are just the same. They're just so repetitive. Like, I don't care. I don't care for the gimmick. Like I said, he's not done anything to change it or make it different. So, Ben, there was one segment before this match with Tony Schiavone announcing MJF unable to defend the title.
Yeah, and bringing out Bryce Rensburg, and, you know, so it continues the whole storyline. And the second he came out and said that, I'm like, okay, well, he's gonna wrestle.
I'm glad Bleacher agrees with us on this point, because it said, they say here, the booking makes no sense, no matter what big angle AEW has planned for the main event segment.
I agree.
So, okay, is that all you have for this match?
Yes, sir.
All right, so I'm going to go back to the first match for a minute to give you that grade. So they gave that one a C+.
Okay. I agree.
They gave the Orange Cassidy John Moxley match an A.
On what planet?
What?
You're fucking, you're either fucking high or you're trying to jerk Tony Khan off. And I don't mean to be that graphic, but come on, man. Come on, bro.
Like, how do you give this one an A? And then, out of curiosity, I want to see what Freaking Out Wrestling Data gave it, because I trust Wrestling Data more than I do Bleacher.
So well, after Bleacher gave a high grade to the you know, to the Like a Dragon street fight,
what? I know, I couldn't believe that. That was terrible from beginning to end.
I know.
It was such a train wreck. Hold on. Yeah, okay, so apparently Bleacher gave it the Bleacher fans gave it 4 stars. No, sorry, 3.9 out of 6. Yeah, so yeah, 4-star.
So that you said Bleacher gave it that, you mean
No, Wrestling Data fans.
3.9 out of 6. Okay, well that's better. So they gave it a C.
So next we had the AEW Women's World Championship, Hikaru Shida versus Marilyn Monroe.
I didn't care for this match at all. This was another one I didn't care for.
This was a weird one too. Like, so all of a sudden you suddenly take it off of Shida and put it back on Toni Storm.
Yeah. So what was the point of Shida even winning it? Right. I mean, I agree that Toni Storm is a better wrestler than Hikaru Shida. All due respect.
But let's stop with the shoe. We're not too long here.
It's just, watch for the shoe. No, thank you.
And my God, Luther, this is the best thing they have for him.
Yeah, I mean, if I were him, I'd be asking for my release. And you know, I don't know if he can get booking anywhere else.
Oh, my God. Did you hear, like, one of Taz's comments?
No, I admit I tend to tune out AEW commentary.
Apparently, I don't know what he was talking about. Or I think he was... That thing is still sticking out of the back of her britches.
Oh, yes. Well, I did catch that. And you know what? That was another thing that made the ref, and I think it was Aubrey Edwards.
Yeah, Aubrey Edwards.
That's another thing that made Aubrey look fucking stupid. Because it was right there. It wasn't hidden. It was right there.
Okay, I got a question, though. Like, this Mariah May, what do you think of this one?
Well, I can't really give you an opinion yet because I haven't seen her wrestle.
Yeah.
I've heard of her, but I haven't seen her wrestle.
Like, appearance-wise, I like her. Like, I've seen her few times on TikTok, but outside of that, I can't really say much more until I see her in the ring.
And to be a Toni Storm fangirl, I mean, you know,
right.
Now, if we were talking about, you know, the original Toni Storm, then hell yes. Toni Storm is one of the most beautiful women and one of the best wrestlers, period.
Yep.
Okay? Because if you saw her WWE, if you saw her NXT matches, if you've seen her before WWE, as I've been fortunate enough to witness a few online, she is a very, very good wrestler. You know,
imagine if she was still in WWE and she was booked for Elimination Chamber next year. back in their hometown floor of Australia.
Oh my God. Those people would have gotten crazy. Between her and Rhea Ripley, those people would have had an orgasm in the stands. I mean, good God. And I wouldn't have blamed them at all.
it would have been iconic.
Yeah, yes, even though I don't like the iconic. That's just me. But yeah, I mean, this
I had to.
No disrespect, but this is like a bathroom break match. Yeah. And why does Toni Storm need a gimmick thing in her pants to beat anybody? I mean, right. It's just, what's the point?
So, okay, so I'm confused here, though. Is she a heel or a face?
I think she's a heel.
Okay, because when she broke off of the Outcast?
Yeah,
I think that made her a face, right?
Yeah, when she broke away from him.
So then she turned heel again.
I don't know. To me, that's confusing. To me, this gimmick is a heel gimmick.
Yeah. Now, that was confusing because if she broke away from the Outcast, that made her a face, and now she's doing this gimmick. This is not a face gimmick.
Exactly. I agree.
So this one got a C+.
Well, and justifiably so. That's exactly what it deserves.
And on Wrestling Data, it got a, let me just pull it up, a 3.8.
Well, fair enough. Absolutely. Now next up, I'm not saying that this was a bad match, but hear me out. It was entertaining ladder match.
Can I just say Brody King's face paint scares me. He's a monster. I love Brody King.
Brody King in general is very scary.
Yeah.
That's a bad, bad man. Yeah. And he has, because you know I'm a tattoo guy, right? Mm-hmm. And for those of you that don't know, if you're unaware, the majority of my left arm is tattooed. I have pieces on both sides of my chest. I got a big piece on my back. So I'm relatively heavily tattooed with 11 tattoos, right?
What the fuck?
But this guy makes me look like a rookie. I mean, this guy pretty much has a bodysuit, of tattoos, and with the face paint, he looks like a badass.
Yeah.
The whole presentation of the
come on, look at that right there. Look at that.
I know. It's
that face paint alone gives me nightmares.
It's ridiculous. And why the fuck am I getting an... Okay. We had a little computer snafu there. Hopefully it didn't come through too much. But I love Brody King and the House of Black. I don't like what they're doing with them right now. Just because they're not in the prominent position that I want them in. They haven't been booked the way I would prefer.
Yep. I still can't believe this team is the tag team champions. Ricky Starks and Big Bill.
And that was still fucking random. Can we go back to, and talk about that match? Because Taz was talking about it in the middle of the ladder match. They were talking about how FTR got destroyed by Ricky Starks and Big Bill to win the titles, and they did. But why in the fuck would you book FTR to get crushed by anybody, let alone Ricky Starks and Big fucking Bill?
Oh, right.
And I don't have a problem with Bill Morrissey at all. I have I think he has a lot of potential. But the name Big Bill absolutely sucks. But getting back to the actual match. So this one, to me, started very, very slow. Like, you know, for me, you know, ladder matches are supposed to be action, right? And we didn't really get that till the end of the match. Now, granted, if you're anything like me, folks, you're just burned out on the ladder match concept, period, because it's just so overdone in pro wrestling, in my opinion. But this one didn't really do anything to stand out, in my opinion. I mean, they had some cool spots at the end there. With Brody King going through one, and before he went through one, he put someone through one with his finisher, which looked absolutely sick. But I just, it doesn't, like, this whole thing with Ricky Starks and Big Bill doesn't make sense. And you mean to tell me with three established tag teams the caliber of FTR, you know, big with FTR, the House of Black, and Rush and Dralistico, a patchwork tag team that, like, the Ricky Starks and Big Bill are gonna beat them? Are you fucking, like, you know, that's where the booking aspect of it just doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Yeah, and okay.
Just one last thing. And personally, I am much more invested in seeing House of Black get over the hump and become tag team champions. I wouldn't even mind FTR winning the titles again, because it would have proven that Big Bill and Ricky Starks were a fluke. And I don't think that would have hurt Ricky Starks necessarily, because he's never been a tag team guy. Like, yes, he was in Team Taz, but that wasn't really a tag team. That was more of a, like, a organizational thing. You know what I mean? And it's just, what? And can some, and I know I'm talking, and I'm going to let you have your say too, but can somebody explain why the fuck are Jose and Preston Vance with Rush and Dralistico?
That's la facción gobernables.
Well, I know, but really, Preston Vance.
I know, but it doesn't make sense.
I mean, you know, because, you know, LFI has been one of those factions that's been in, you know, not only AEW, but also Ring of Honor. You know, I think they've been in New Japan now. You know, they've been all over the place. And really, my base issue is, what the I curse too much on this show, and I really do apologize. I'm trying to work on it. But what have Rush and Dralistico done in AEW? This would have been a perfect coming out party for them. And no.
Wasn't Rush supposed to be doing a program with Andrade where they were like business partner or something?
That would be amazing. What happened to that?
Right, because I remember when Rush showed up, because him and Andrade were in the back, like, talking.
Because, believe it or not, Andrade and Rush used to be a tag team before Andrade was in WWE.
Well, I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, no. I thought they were going somewhere with that.
I did too. What the fuck happened to that? Tony, you know, I wish I had a mega horn, like Foghorn Leghorn out here. It's right the fuck there. Oh, I'm sorry.
I actually do have one. I just don't know where it is. Like, I actually had a megaphone.
well, you absolutely need to find it so we can start yelling at Tony Khan for his moronic shit.
I'm
going to
have to ask my dad where it is. I think it's put away somewhere. I'm not sure where, though.
Well, that's sad.
Yeah.
But it's just... So it's not like this match was bad. I don't want you to, you know, but really?
Yeah.
You know, you have a perfect, you know, both, you know, Jalisco is tailor-made for a ladder match, in my opinion. I think I've seen Roosh, you know, or maybe that was Bandido, so I might be mistaken, but, you know, but you have a perfect opportunity on a pay-per-view platform to get a new tag team over that you've done absolutely nothing with. Yep. And you have a patchwork tag team, the likes of Ricky Starks and Big Fucking Bill. Really? Am I missing something here? So I've been talking entirely too much, and I apologize, Elio. But things like this tend to get me riled up. What did you think of this match?
For me, it was just okay, but it wasn't really like, I just didn't the result of who won the match. I think they should have put it on a team like Rush and Dralistico.
And just so you people know, we didn't talk about this before the show, did we? I didn't ask you to agree with me for, you know, to make it sound good or anything like that, did I?
Nope.
This is just great minds thinking alike.
Yeah. Now what are you gonna give this one?
I'll give it a C.
So Bleacher gave it a B. Wrestling Data for some reason gave it a 4.5 out of 6.
For what reason, I'd like to know.
I have no idea.
I just, you know, and actually, some of the reports that I was looking at gave this whole pay-per-view a 9 out of 10, and I couldn't...
What?
I couldn't use them based out of principle, so I found one that is much more reasonable in terms of rating. So before we go off on another tangent about rating... and stuff like that. Let's move on to the next one. This was one that I was actually quite looking forward to. Mm-hmm. This was the TBS Championship triple threat match between Chris Statlander, Julia Hart, and Sky Blue. Elio had Sky Blue winning, and I had Julia Hart winning.
Wait,
I win.
Good for Julia Hart, because... I like her. I think she's improved from when we first saw her with the Russian Blondes.
Absolutely. And what a far cry this is from being a cheerleader in Varsity Blondes. And shout out to her, because she told the story, I think it was on an on-air thing a while back. Or maybe not, but anyway, I saw in an interview somewhere that she came up to Malachi and was like, you know, I think I'd be a good fit for this faction that you have, and Malachi was kind of surprised by that because of her previous gimmick and things. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, you know, what can you bring to the table, so to speak? You know, not he wasn't short with her or rude, you know, but he was just, you know, he was having a conversation, and so she pitched it to him. You know, he saw some of her stuff and decided to to have the chance. And she has just absolutely smashed this out of the park.
And good for her. She won the title. They took it off Chris Statlander because they are not doing anything with Chris Statlander. They were doing so much with her when AEW first started. And then she got injured and she went away. And now she's back and they haven't done anything.
Well, actually, she got injured twice.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So she went out with an injury and then she came back and they've not done anything with her since.
Yeah, and granted, Jade Cargill is in WWE now, but, they took it off of her, and she was a massively, pushed champion, right or wrong. That's been a discussion we've had on this podcast. But, they took the title off of her, and now the title, again, means nothing. And no disrespect to Chris Statlander, I actually quite enjoy her work, this one was a really good showing for me. All three ladies, I think, did really well. I was happy that Sky Blue had a good showing. Once again, I thoroughly appreciated her her Scooby-Doo Mystery Machine attire on Dynamite. I thoroughly appreciated that. And then one other thing in relation to Sky Blue. During her entrance, she took off the baseball cap and replaced it with a crown and stomped on the baseball cap. So maybe that is a signal for the completion of this evolution of her character.
What is her character supposed to be? I like it. I'm just wondering what it's supposed to be.
I'm not sure. It reminds me a lot of Julia Hart at this point, but we will have to.
Well, I'm here for it. Let's go.
Yes, yes, absolutely. We are fans of Sky Blue on this show, and in all seriousness, it was awesome to see all three ladies have a really nice showing, because this, in my opinion, the pay-per-view was starting to get a little bit draggish.
I think they got it right with their green on this one.
I do too. So
the grade that they gave it.
Oh, I thought you said book. I thought you said booking. So
no, with the grade. I think they got it right with the grade. So Bleacher gave the B.
Yep, I agree.
And Wrestling Data gave it a, Wrestling Data, I don't know, man, 3.6 out of 6.
Yeah, well, that's a little low in my opinion.
I don't know about that. I think Bleacher had it right on this one.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think we have enough time to go over the Texas Death Match.
I was gonna say, because then I have a transcript I want to read. Comments made by Jim Cornette.
So, with
regards to this match.
Right. So, do we have enough time to do that?
I have 8:46.
Okay. So before I give my thoughts, let Elio have the floor with Jim Cornette's commentary on this match.
So, Jim Cornette's commentary on this match. Okay, so then Hangnail gets a staple gun and staples Swerve's chest. He's stapling him in the titties, not the nipples. That's against the Geneva Convention. And then he gets a format or a piece of paper or whatever. And he staples it to Swerve's arm.
Jim, that was Hangman's son's finger painting from the break-in promo on Dynamite. Get it right. Continue.
Now, meanwhile, Brian, you know what a staple gun looks like. You worked in an office. Do you think most of the people know what a staple gun looks like? it's a big metal thing, and you squeeze it, and it's got the thing goes across your fingers, and you squeeze it, and it staples, right? If you're in a fight with a motherfucker, especially if you look like Adam Page, and the other motherfucker looks like Swerve Strickland, and you've got a staple gun in your head, are you going to staple him in the titty, or are you going to draw back and punch him in the bridge of the fucking nose with it? That's the idea. He's got brass and knuckles on his hand, and he's stapling this motherfucker's arm, and then he stapled his face, and Swerve is letting him do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And because we know that this is all fake, okay. Because of the general overall presentation of AEW, people are sitting there going, well, this stupid motherfucker is letting the other stupid motherfucker steal his fucking cheek and his titties. And at that point, somehow, he's busted Swerve open also, and Swerve hit a gusher and starts pouring blood. And this is where Paige lays down on his back as Swerve is bending over, bleeding from his head, lays down on his back and opens his mouth and so that he can drink Swerve's blood to show how badass he is.
That part I did not like, because no. Like that just makes me squeamish, and like I think that's unsanitary and not healthy.
And I believe it. And I believe at that point, you know, again, I go back to when Linda Johnson said, after Cronkite came back from Vietnam, if we've lost Cronkite, we've lost America. I think they've lost the female audience that they might not have had to begin with on that one. And again, they might have lost the network that they potentially might or might not have had off of that one. You fucking what? Idiot. He's no better than the plumber, the fucking bank-addicted drug robber. He got more hair, that's it, Paige. Otherwise, he is as stupid and demented and fucking distasteful.
Well, I think that particular part with the drinking of the blood, I do think that was distasteful. I will say that. Yeah. I'm fully with him there. I didn't like that. I thought it was disgusting. However, as a Texas death match, this was one of the better matches and one of the better bloodbaths that I've seen, because I think you have to be, you kind of have to know going in, when you have a match like this, what it's going to be. And given the nature of the feud, remember when Trish Stratus and Becky were feuding, and Trish mentioned Becky's kid, and I always said that should be the basis for the feud, and like, you know, Becky should just go in there and rip Trish apart.
Yep.
Well, and that's what happened here. Like, the match and the violence associated with it fit the severity of the feud, because, you know, I don't even have kids, and I can tell you that if you break in somewhere and hurt my niece and nephew, I'm going to kill you. Mm-hmm. And there's no question, I'm not trying to be tough, I'm going to kill you. And that's just what it is. You know, so and that and this match made me believe that a Hangman was fighting to that level. So from that perspective, it was very effective.
The match overall, it was one of the better matches, but yeah, that one part just took me out. Just that one part. Otherwise, the rest of it wasn't bad.
And I 100% agree with you. And with
it. Oh wait, is that all we have for the match?
I think so.
I'm gonna give the grade that we have.
Okay.
So for Hangman and Swerve, Bleacher gives it an A-.
You know what? I'm not gonna complain about that. because minus the one spot that we talked about, I think that this match was tremendously effective.
And Wrestling Data gives it a 5.3 out of 6.
I agree.
And now we should go into break and we're back with the rest of Full Gear and Raw and Survivor Series.
Okay, very good.
Okay, we're back. We're going to get into the next match. And this, I do not care one bit about this match. The Golden Jets, Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho versus the Young Bucks, who I just cannot stand. They're a bunch of children that will never grow up.
Well, Elio said it, but I 100% agree with you. Look, this match doesn't hold any interest to me. One, and hear me out because I have, legitimate reasons. One, I don't remember Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega ever being a thing. Maybe they were in New Japan. I'm not sure.
No, they actually had a match in Wrestle Kingdom 11.
Well, I know they had a match, but had they ever tagged together?
No, not that I know of.
So this is a very random thing. And I'm just,
I'm curious. I can look that up while you're talking.
I'm not a fan of the Young Bucks at all.
Nope.
Their matches are just spot fest. I don't. It's just a joke.
They think they're cool when they're really not.
No, and then for your point, and I'm sure this was planned. I'm not saying they did this on purpose or for real, but the tantrum that they threw because they lost their tag team title shot as a condition of losing this match to the Golden Jets, I shit you not, that's what Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega call themselves.
You know, they get the Jets part, though, right?
Yes, the from the hockey.
Yeah.
And
I don't like that name.
And interesting tidbit, in Central Intelligence, where the Rock, one of the Rock's movies, Kevin Hart in high school, his nickname was the Golden Jet. So, but that's more entertaining. That movie is more entertaining than this match.
Correct.
But it was just so slow, and I'm like, what is the point of this match? I don't get it. But in all seriousness, I just. It sounds like we're being smartasses because we legitimately don't like the Young Bucks. But I just was like, wait a minute, what's the point of all of this?
So I'm just looking it up, like Chris Jericho, Kenny Omega.
Yeah.
So Wrestle Kingdom 12, not 11. It was Kenny Omega versus Chris Jericho. October 29, 2018, ROH, Chris Jericho's Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea. Cody and Kenny and Marty Scurll defeated Jericho and the Young Bucks. So it's always been Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega. They've never teamed up before. Actually, they only had teamed up one time on AEW Dynamite, the March 15, 2023 episode.
Okay, very cool. That's one of the reasons why I love having Elio on this show. He can fill in the gaps for me. Very good. I'm being very serious. That very much helps. And then next up, of course, we had the main event. Okay, now this is where we're gonna get.
This is the main event.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is let me
give the grade here.
Okay.
So for Jericho and Omega, Bleach, you gave it a B.
Are you fucking high? Oh my god.
Meanwhile, Wrestling Data gave it a 4.3 out of 6.
Well, that's more reasonable, but god damn. Because, you know, 5 out of 6 is 83%, so 4.3 out of 6 is, like, closer to a C, so I get that.
Wait till we get to the main event. Go ahead.
Well, actually, because 4 out of 6 is a 67%. So, okay. Yeah.
Wait till we get to the main event. Go ahead.
But, okay. Now, first, let's get into the match itself without talking about all of the stuff surrounding it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So from that perspective, this match was very, very good. Both guys, I love both guys, and the match was legitimately very good. So I don't want to take away from any of that.
A lot of people were saying this match wasn't good.
Well, I don't really... That's their opinion, and I think that they're referring to the storyline stuff not making sense. Okay, all right,
that makes sense.
I think that's what they're referring to. All
right.
And we're gonna get into that, but Jay White and MJF, you really can't mess with them in terms of the wrestling aspect of it. Okay, but this is where. But now we're going to get into the storyline thing, which in my opinion completely overshadowed the wrestling aspect of it, which I hated. Because I think if you just let these two go out there, MJF and Jay White, have an awesome match for the world title, you're going to have a win. And I think match-wise, quality-wise, they did that minus the storyline stuff. But here's where the storyline stuff gets so fucked up. Oh my god. My ears were probably smoking from trying to make this make sense. So first we get Adam Cole coming out to defend the championship on behalf of MJF, because he got taken away in an ambulance pre-show. We covered that already.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so as he's doing that, Jay White is standing in the ring, and him and the guns are laughing their asses off, justifiably so, because Adam Cole is on crutches, and he's got a cast on his leg, and you know, he can barely get in the ring because he's got to get the crutches in there, and he can barely roll himself in there. Now, I don't know if he's actually hurt that bad or whatever, but I do know he just had surgery, so I don't know. But in what world are you going to buy that a man on crutches can legitimately compete in a world title match, number one? Number two, in what world am I going to buy that the AEW medical team is going to allow that?
Right.
Dr. Michael Sampson, who, by the way, is the one that saved Jerry Lawler from the heart attack and saved his life from the heart attack he suffered live on the air in 2012. So shout out to him for being a legitimate badass doctor. No. So you made him look like a moron. Because you're allowing this match to continue, to go on against medical advice. Because I guarantee you, that wouldn't happen. So Tony Khan and AEW look like morons from that perspective too. And then you have, you know, MJF come out, you know. They back the ambulance into the arena, and here he comes. You know, he's hell on one leg trying to get out there. But here's the thing. So I'm focusing on the entrances because of this. So when MJF comes out,
mm-hmm,
after Adam Cole, you have all these medical people trying to stop, like all these backstage people trying to stop him. You know, he can barely get to the ring. He falls to one knee. He can't do it. So you got all these people trying to stop him, but yet the match continues. You must have had 20 people out there trying to stop him, but they can't stop him, and the match goes on his plan. You got Jay White laughing his ass off. You got the guns acting like jackasses. This whole thing doesn't look good.
Right.
And then you have Adam Cole, who is more busted up than MJF is, but nobody's trying to stop him from taking MJF's spot in a world championship match for a world championship that isn't his. Good God.
Makes no sense.
You know, so you got that, right? And then the bell rings and you know, Adam Cole can't do anything to protect his friend, and they do the all beleaguered injury thing. But meanwhile, later in the match, MJF doesn't dive to the outside, but he's got a broken leg and a busted up knee.
Let me tell you something. In 2017, I was in the hospital with a broken hip.
Yeah,
I couldn't even take a step after I broke my hip. I couldn't even take a step. I spent the day at home before I went to the hospital. I couldn't even take it. My neighbor was trying to get me to walk to take a step to the kitchen, and I couldn't do it. So how is this guy gonna jump off a top rope?
And you know, so it's just like the suspension of belief aspect is just completely out the door, because it's like, holy fuck.
It makes no sense.
To me, if you really break it down from a, and I don't want to be too much of an asshole, because I understand what they were trying to do. But given the fact that the injury aspect didn't really play into the match too much, and we didn't have a run in after the fact, and the devil thing wasn't figured out. And so the injury aspect of it wasn't really necessary to have the match. Because they had done enough leading up to the match to make me interested in seeing MJF and Jay White. So this whole thing wasn't necessary.
So they didn't do nothing with the whole devil angle.
No. They didn't do jack shit.
They're probably gonna make us wait till Wednesday, and Wednesday they're probably not even gonna do anything on Dynamite.
Or even worse, they'll make us wait till World's End. You know, which is December 30th.
That's ridiculous.
Well, this whole booking thing was ridiculous. If you really break it down, folks, and I swear to God, I'm not trying to be an asshole, but like, this is how analytical and just logical I get. This makes AEW look more stupid than when the exploding barbed wire match, the explosion, you know, hardly went off at all at the end of the match, and Eddie Kingston is there laying on top of John Moxley trying to save his life, and you got sparklers going off like a fucking, you know, cheerleading competition. You know, this spot with MJF and Jay White and Adam Cole, this is how stupid this looked. So despite the fact that I think in-ring-wise, MJF and Jay White had a good match, because that's who the fuck they are, and that's what they're capable of doing. It's all hampered because all people are talking about is this fucked up storyline that makes no fucking sense whatsoever. It's so stupid. My 13-year-old nephew can write a better match and a better storyline than this. What the fuck is going on here?
Right.
And there, I owe so much money to the curse jar just because of this match, and I'm trying to be better because I honestly curse too much. But Jesus,
Ben, what you said about the whole double thing, they might stretch out. How are they going to stretch that all the way out to December 30th? That's going to be bad. People are going to get tired. They're going to be like, no.
I'm already done. Tired.
We're done.
I'm already tired.
I know, right?
You know, I got Roderick Strong screaming, Adam! Adam!
Yeah, Adam Cole hanging up on him all the time, every time.
You know, it's just bad.
Wait, you know what confused me about Adam Roderick Strong?
What's that?
How is he getting cheered all of a sudden?
I don't know.
I don't understand.
What did you think of this match, both from an in-ring and from a logical standpoint?
So in-ring, it was a good match, but like the whole execution, like you have Adam Page like coming out, getting him involved. Didn't you have MJF?
You mean Brian Cage? Ooh, it was Brian Cage, not Adam Page.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Adam Cole getting involved in this whole scenario and like wanting to defend the title for MJF. You have MJF driving out to the ring. You have him jumping off the top rope with a broken leg. It's like okay. Like the match itself was good, but the whole everything after that was just ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So, what grade do we give this one?
I would have to give it a C+, based on all the bullshit around it. I really would. Yeah. That's how much it takes it down. And this motherfucker, I swear to God, Elio, help me. Uh-oh. I'm not gonna name names, but I need help.
Okay.
I might need psychological help. This reviewer gave this match a 4 1/4 star.
Okay. I don't know why.
What would you give this match?
We'll get a C+, just for all the garbage show surrounding it.
Okay, well, and to me, that's perfectly reasonable. That's the same reason I gave my rating the way I did.
So here we go. Bleacher gave it a C.
Thank you. And Bleacher's a bunch of ass kissers. And what does that tell you?
And Wrestling Data, let's see what they gave it. They give it a 4.7 out of 6.
No. Bleacher, you have it right on the button. You're proving yourselves to be more intelligent than I thought you were. So my hat's off to you. Very good. Good God.
So overall, what do you give the whole pay-per-view itself?
I give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay, letter.
I give it a C+.
Okay, so Bleacher gave it a B-. I would give it a 7 out of 10. There were one or two matches that were mid, but like overall, it wasn't bad. So Bleacher gave it a B-. 78.5% of WrestlingData.com users rated this 4.9 out of 6.
Oh my God, you guys are a bunch of fucking marks. Jesus Christ. Can we get some honest thoughts on this? You know?
Seriously.
Oh my God.
What is going on? All right, Ben, we're going to move away from Full Gear and get into Monday Night Raw.
Very good. All right. Now, for this, we will be returning to the highs and lows format.
All right.
So, because Elio has not seen the entirety of Monday Night Raw, I will be taking this. This is obviously the go home show before War Games. So a lot of this was focused on final build. And from that perspective, this show did exactly what it needed to do. This was a good show in terms of getting you invested in War Games. So that would be my first note. So match wise, well, before we get into the matches, let me do this. So so Adam Pearce came out and said, you know, we have two announcements. One, nobody is going to touch anybody, or else the person that does, their team is going to lose the advantage in the Survivor Series. That's because the main event was to determine who was gonna have the advantage in War Games, right? So he said, if we have any bullshittery, you know, it's gonna, you know, that team is gonna lose that thing. And then I believe number two, what was number two? Let me think. I'll think about it. Hold on. Let me just see if it. Aha. I think. Oh, very good. So, hold on. I can find it. Hold on. And the second one was that Cody's team had to find a fifth member, and by 9 o'clock they need to decide on the participants in the advantage match. So those were the two things. Now I'm going to start with low points because that's the first thing I'm running into in terms of the matches on this card.
Okay.
So really, the only low point that I had in ring wise was Nia Jax versus Raquel Rodriguez. What the fuck was this?
Right.
I know Raquel is more talented than this. Good yes. God. But, you know, Nia Jax is just... I don't get her out of the ring. Like, and yes, the commercial did hurt it because it cut, like, half of the match time from what we saw.
But, so, but hold on, did they come back and say, moments ago?
I believe so, yes.
See, that's what I like. The AEW needs to do that, not this picture in picture. They need to stop with that.
Well, yes. Picture in picture needs to die a very quick yet painful death.
Yes.
Let's see. And then before we get off War Games, the start of the show was Drew McIntyre saying exactly what I said on Friday's show, that he's not a part of Judgment Day, but he is a part of the Judgment Day Survivor Series War Games team.
Right.
You know, these dumbasses are asking, do you think Drew McIntyre is really on Judgment Day? You know, can you people get a brain?
Please? You know what? You know what? People that ask that have never watched the original Survivor Series. Because though those Survivor Series teams were made up of random people thrown together on a team.
I know. God
damn. And they were mainly made up of people who were feuding with the wrestlers on the opposite team.
Exactly. Well, from that perspective, they got this right. But, I mean, Jesus Christ.
But, like, that's what, like, when fans say that, like, stuff like that, they've never seen Survivor Series.
It's like, no wonder people think wrestling fans are incels, you fucks.
You can say all you want that you've seen Survivor Series, you've never seen Survivor Series. So don't
Yes.
I've seen Survivor Series.
It's Ben like one.
I've seen it. Ben has seen Survivor Series. You haven't. Sit down.
Yes. It's like it's like trying to explain logic to one of our former co-hosts. Elio knows exactly what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yes, sir.
God, I used to get so upset. So, if my computer would unfreeze itself, I'm surprised I can actually talk to you right now. There we go. But the next low point I had Well, actually, I think it was my only low point. So we'll move on to high points.
Yeah, you said that you only had that one this low point.
So high points, I would say, Becky versus Zaya. That was really good in terms of a coming out party for Zaya Lee. I would also give a high point to
Johnny Gargano and Ludwig Kaiser.
Absolutely.
Or is it Ludwig Kaiser?
I think it should be the second one. Ludwig Kaiser. And then I would also give a high point to the main event. The ending was a little bit of abrupt, so that would stop me from giving this an A, but I like the fact that it was Drew McIntyre versus Jey Uso, because they really do have a legitimate problem with each other. So it made me more invested in the match.
Okay.
So what did you have for highs and lows?
So the low points was the same as yours. The night, any Nia Jax match has to be a low point for me.
I love you. I just, thank you. A man that recognizes what the truth actually is. Thank you.
High point is Becky Lynch and Xia Li and Johnny Gargano and Ludwig Kaiser. And the main event, so Jey Uso and Drew McIntyre.
Very good.
But Shinsuke Nakamura.
I'm not sure what's going on there.
I have ideas, so I'm going to save it for Friday. Because we need a post for Friday. We need another one, and I came up with one.
What's that?
So with all these promos Shinsuke is doing, who is Shinsuke Nakamura's next target?
That's a very good post. You should message Clay.
I already did that earlier.
Okay, very good.
Yeah. So is that all we have for Raw?
Absolutely.
And I think we have time to get into the Survivor Series, right?
Yeah, we got 10 minutes, and there's only 5 matches, so I think we're good.
All right, so let me pull up Survivor Series. Okay, so Survivor Series 2023, we'll go bottom to top.
Okay.
So Carlito versus Santos Escobar.
Santos Escobar, absolutely.
I got Santos as well. And we have women's war game match, Bianca Belair's team versus Damage Control.
Damage Control, I would give it to Damage Control because they just spent so much time, rebuilding that faction.
I got Damage Control as well. Then we have the men's war game. We got Cody Rhodes team versus Judgment Day. I've got Cody Rhodes team.
Yes, especially with the return of Randy Orton, confirmed. And also going back to Raw just very briefly, because it corresponds directly with the men's War Games match. So we got the announcement of Randy Orton being the final member of Cody's team. I did not like the fact that he wasn't there for that.
I know, at least come out, even if you just stand at the top of the stage and just at least come out to look around at the crowd.
Yeah,
then,
exactly.
Have Rob go off there that way. I hate when they say someone's gonna return, but they don't actually return on that show, especially the go home show.
Exactly. So, but what's the next one?
Next one is for the women's championship, Rhea Ripley versus Zoe Stark.
Rhea Ripley.
Yeah, I've got Rhea Ripley. Can't see her losing it anytime soon. And then we have Gunther versus The Miz.
Gunther, absolutely.
Then we have Gunther as well. And okay, I heard a ridiculous theory about Gunther.
What's that?
So these people were commenting on a post, they're arguing back and forth. One of them's like, you know, by WrestleMania 40, Gunther will have been Intercontinental Champion for 666 days, and that's the devil's number. So he could possibly face CM Punk at WrestleMania 40. And then he retained the title, forfeited the title on the 667th day, which is the Raw after Mania, and then go after Seth Rollins.
Oh my God.
I'm
You gotta get a life, folks.
like, what? I'm like, what? What? That makes no sense.
Yeah.
So that all we have for Survivor Series then.
Absolutely.
All right, you know what? Yeah, I don't think 6 minutes will work for a wrestling roulette. We'll be back shortly.
Absolutely.
All right, we're back, Ben. Final segment, wrestling roulette. No tournaments this week. We're gonna save all the fun stuff for the next show because we have to focus on a full gear and Survivor Series.
Oh, well, that makes perfect sense. And yeah, like Elio said, these shows are very, centralized and focused because, obviously we feel like, that's what you guys want to hear, coming off the heels of these
Well,
things.
plus Battle of the Bands, I have to put that together because that's going to be just like the 100 greatest wrestlers tournament. It's not going to be 4 rounds, I don't think. You know, I think this will be 2 rounds with 25 wrestler 25 groups in each bracket, in each
Very cool.
round. Yeah.
So we do have some fun stuff for you, but let us get through these pay-per-views. And don't forget, once we do, Wrestling History 101 is also coming back. We did not
Yes.
forget about that.
Nope. And I still have to work on the poster for that one, which I will do before that show comes out. So, on to wrestling roulette. Play 21 clips, 10 seconds. Ben has to guess which wrestler I think belongs to. Ben, are you ready for your first one?
Yes, sir.
You up. Before we start, however, we have obstacles along the way. So if a wrestler's theme appears more than once in the during the rotation, it is -1 point.
Ooh.
All right, so Ben, are you ready for your first one?
Yes, sir.
Edge. All right. That is one. You're on the board with one. Can
Cool.
we over the next one?
Is that the Viking Raiders?
No, it is not. That is Dominik Dijakovic.
Oh, shit. Sorry, Dominic.
Okay, number three.
God damn. I don't know. It's some sort of surfer gimmick. I don't know.
That is the Headbangers.
Oh, shit.
All right, number four.
Big E.
Big E, you are on the board with two. All right, number five.
Set the scene.
Wow. You know, back. All right, Ben, number five. Here we go.
They are indeed the Nation of Domination.
Yes. All right, number six.
Priceless. Oh,
Ted DiBiase Jr.
Yes. We're getting a lot of firsts here that we haven't had before.
Indeed.
All right, number seven.
I'm not sure.
I love this song, and this belongs to Kevin Von Erich.
Yeah, I would never have gotten that.
This is a great song. I love this one. Stranglehold, if you haven't heard it, go listen to it.
Well, of course, I've heard the song. I just,
I'm talking about all the other fans out there. Learn your music. Go listen to good music. Don't listen to the crap of today.
Yeah, exactly. Another reason why I love this man.
All right, number eight, here we go.
Is that Luther Reigns?
That Luther Reigns? No, that's Christian.
Oh.
That's hilarious that you say Luther Reigns, because whenever we get Luther Reigns, you never guess that one. All right, number nine, here we go. Viva la raza!
I lie, I cheat, I steal. I lie, I cheat, I steal. That is Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah, Eddie Guerrero. You are on the board with five. Number 10.
Honky Tonk Man?
Honky Tonk Man, yes. Was that a guess?
Sort of, yeah. It sounded like him, though.
All right, number 11.
That is a horrible remix of Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I wonder how many versions of this theme he has. Like, they have a whole bunch of them on here. Like, I don't understand. I don't remember him ever using any of these alternate versions.
Yeah. They must be on, like, the Aggression CDs or something.
No, it's like this WWE Uncaged collection, but it's like, it's weird.
Or that.
They have these versions that have never been used. All right, here we go, number 12.
Street Profits?
No, it is not. That is Carmelo Hayes.
Oh, shit. I'm sorry.
Yeah, number 13.
Diesel?
That is Bill DeMott.
Oh, who cares? Shit.
All right, 14. Dead man
walking. Undertaker.
Undertaker. Number 15.
Sable.
Sable. All right, 17.
16.
Sorry?
I think it's 16.
Yeah, 16, sorry.
Carmella?
No, it's not. That is Emma.
Oh, sorry.
All right, 17.
Thank you. Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yes, number 18.
John Cena.
John Cena. Number 18.
JBL.
No, it's not. It's a new theme from Dallas. Okay, number 19. Oh,
yes, another shitty remix.
Minus 1 point, you are down, back down to 11. Okay, number 20, here we go.
Pass.
That is Alex Wright, WCW.
Never would have got that.
Okay, last one. Are you ready?
Yep. I have not a clue.
That is Hulk Hogan.
Since when? What the fuck?
That's how she is a 1984 theme. Before Eye of the Tiger? No, after Eye of the Tiger?
After, I don't even after, remember after, him after, using
after, after he won the championship.
Oh.
And if you've seen Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling, have you seen that one?
No.
Okay, so if you go and look at Hogan's Rock and Wrestling, it's the theme from that cartoon.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. All right, so the final score for you is 12.
Okay. That's better than it was last week, so I'm good with that.
Now, let's see what the next one would have been. Are you ready for track 22?
Yes, sir. Mordecai.
How do you always get that?
I remember that gimmick. It's a shame it didn't work, but.
All right, so that is it for Wrestling Roulette. Ben, we should bring the show to a close.
Absolutely.
All right, so that is it for another episode of the PC Progression Wrestling Podcast. Of course, we'll be back on Friday night with Wrestling POV with Tony Diaz, Clay Cummings, myself, and Ben, and we will bring you also the predictions for the Survivor Series for the pay-per-view points game, and then, of course, no show this weekend because we have the pay-per-view, but we'll be back on Tuesday with the results.
Very good.
So, until then, Ben, say goodnight to the fans.
Thanks for hanging out with us. This felt like a marathon. I'll be very interested to see what the final time is. But, you know, you got to do it when you got two shows to cover. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back with Survivor Series. Until then, see you next time. Welcome to the greatest.